Good morning. Glad you're here this morning. I want you to take your Bibles and turn to a book for the depressed. Well, no, it's not for the depressed, it's to make you depressed. It's the book of Ecclesiastes. If you are a person, I don't think we have anyone here this way, but if you were a person that did not believe in God, that did not believe that He is who He says He is, if you didn't believe He existed, it's one that would depress you because it would give a lot of answers that people are looking for today. Does God really matter? Does God really matter? Back in 1971, I know that was a long time ago, but you might remember this. These are some words that were penned by a man. Imagine if there was no, you know what the next word is? That's pretty impressive. Maybe you didn't listen to this. I bet you did. Imagine if there was no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us, only the sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Does that sound familiar? John Lennon wrote that. He continues on. He says, imagine no countries. It's not hard to do. Nothing to kill for or die for. A religion and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. I don't know. Maybe you caught it there. Maybe you might remember hearing it. And you caught that line there. He says that there would be nothing to kill or to die for. What does he lump in with that? And no religion, too. Imagine all the people living in peace. Religion apparently doesn't bring peace, but war. Now, for some, that is true. We can see that as part of the Muslim religion. I'm not saying that everyone that's a Muslim here in America is looking to destroy you. You know that. But one of the tenets of the Islamic faith held by ISIS and others is to kill and destroy. John Lennon, there's no heaven, there's no God, there's no religion. He says it'll bring peace. Did it? Well, he denied God by looking at his life, his own lifestyle, and testimony only even from his son, his children. John Lennon did not have peace. He was an alcoholic. He was involved in drugs. And he had very significant relationship problems, not only with his wives, but also his children. I would say that it did not bring him peace. He was murdered in 1980, and still he has no peace, no rest for his soul. He tried to get it here, and then he found out better when he passed away. He knows no peace. Might surprise you, one of the world's newest religion, according to National Geographic, one of the world's newest major religion is one that seems to be growing very quickly. It's called, anybody know what it's called? It's called no religion. That's what they call themselves, no religion. If religion is a belief in God, a God, They actually don't have a religion. They actually are not without a religion. Let me explain that to you. God, in just a generic term, is somebody or something that controls what's going on around in life, right? And if you say there is no God, who then controls what's going on around in life? Either the God of time and chance just happen, or you. And what do we teach in our culture? Who is God? You are. Where do they teach that? Isn't life about what you deserve? Isn't life what you make it to be? Isn't your success and failure based on what you want to do? Isn't it your right to do this or that? Who controls your destiny? You do. Is that not the messages that this world gives? So to say it's no religion is not really true. It's a religion of self. According to the Pew Research, in 2014, 23% of Americans, that is one quarter of all Americans, they claim to not have any affiliation with any type of religion. Don't really necessarily call themselves atheists, but they're not religious at all. However, that also showed that research also was compared to 2007. In 2007, 4% of Americans said they're atheist, that is the belief that God does not exist, or agnostic, which is you cannot know whether or not God exists. They made up 4% of Americans. That was 7 years prior to the 2014 study, in which it is 7% of Americans. Now you're thinking 4% and 7%, that's pretty small. Did you catch what happened? In 7 years, it almost doubled. It almost doubled in 7 years. Number of reasons. Let me ask you this, though. Let's just consider this. If there was no God, what would life be like? What would life be like without God? Now, if you just take away all the training and all the things that you believe, and you're to say that there's no God, let's look around. Are there people out in the world that believe there's no God? Yeah. Are there people out there that believe that maybe they don't believe there's no God, but they certainly live like there's no God? Oh, yeah, plenty of them, right? In this building, I would assume, and it makes sense, that we all believe in God. I know most of you, I could say that you have your complete trust and knowledge in Jesus Christ alone for your salvation. Not in anything that you do, not belonging to this church or participating in communion or being baptized, none of that, but in what Jesus Christ already accomplished for you, putting your trust in that alone for your salvation. But I want you to consider two things. What would it be like if there was no God? And how might that reflect in your own life? I want you to consider these two things. It might give us a little perspective into why the world does what it does. And it might cause us to look at what we do in our own life. So, over the next few weeks, several weeks, we're going to look at the book of Ecclesiastes. Just an introduction this morning to the book of Ecclesiastes. Looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, he looks at life from under the sun. Life under the sun. You see that phrase, under heaven or under the sun. Solomon, what he's going to do is he's going to take life, look at it, and say, without God, what is life? What is life without God? He, in the book of Ecclesiastes, with some exception, he takes a completely godless, secular mind and observes life. Solomon was excellent at observing life. He also will answer the question, why do you exist? What's the purpose of life? Along with this, we recognize that the book of Ecclesiastes, it was written during the golden age of Israel. It was written it was both literally the golden age and metaphorically the golden age of Israel. Solomon was king, and he had great wealth, and so there's much gold in the land. And they also had peace from their enemies. As I mentioned, Solomon was the author. Solomon, you might recall, was king of Israel after his father David. During his time, there was very few enemies to deal with because David had done most of the work. Solomon, what he did in his kingdom, it was the kingdom of Israel had expanded to about the farthest that it will be until Christ comes. It was Solomon, he became king in the year 971 B.C., he reigned all the way to 932 BC when the kingdom was split. God asked Solomon, shortly after he was made king, what Solomon would like. What grace would he like? And Solomon, he knew as a young man and pretty ignorant about stuff. And so he asked for wisdom, which is a pretty wise thing to ask for. He asked for wisdom. And God said, you know what? Because you didn't ask me for riches, you didn't ask me for peace from your enemies, you didn't ask me for all those selfish things, you asked for wisdom in order to be able to rule my people well, I will add these other things to you. So Solomon, by God's testimony, was made the wisest man who ever lived. In fact, he was worldwide renowned. People would come from all over the world to hear of the wisdom of Solomon. Now, don't think of somebody that's some guru somewhere that has some sort of mystical religious knowledge. Solomon's wisdom is not that way, primarily. It's real simple. If you read the book of Proverbs, you can see how simple it is. It sounds very profound, but it is very simple. What he's done, he's looked at life and he says, you know what? This is what truth is. However, he also had the guidance of the Holy Spirit so that he wrote many of the Proverbs, most of the Proverbs, and collected Proverbs in the book of Proverbs. But he also wrote the book of Song of Solomon, and here we see the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon, he was completely devoted to God until later when he was led astray by his wives. That was plural, wives. Solomon, all of his wisdom, sometimes did foolish things, and we're going to see that here in the book of Ecclesiastes. In this book here, as we begin to look at it here, he asks the big question. He asks the big question. And what is that question? Take in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, look at verse 3. I know I skipped 1 and 2, we'll get back to it. Verse 3, here is the question. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? In other words, what do I get for all the hard work that I do? I was looking at Facebook, and I had a Facebook post show up. And it was someone that I know, and she put on there, why do I work so hard for so little? And so you have an opportunity to respond to what they put there. And so I very lovingly, in Christian love, encouraged her. And I took the letter H and the letter A, and I tapped on those. So what came across there was, ha 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 ha. That's life, isn't it? Why do I work so hard for so little? To me, I made a joke of it. Because I thought to myself, you know, I don't really know too many people that would not say that. They think about the hard work they do wherever they're at. Maybe they're at home and they're having to deal with the rest of the kids. And so they're not only cleaning the house and doing laundry and making dinner, and they're watching the kids on top of it all. I don't know how they do it all. And, you know, and what do they get paid? Well, they get paid the husband's check, right? Because that's what he does, hands it to her. They can look and say, why do I work so hard and I don't get much out of it? People that live, that have jobs and careers, and they work hard, they work 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and they look at their paycheck and say, why do I don't get much that way? But it doesn't just have to be financial. What about satisfaction? I do all this work and then what? Ecclesiastes chapter 1, look at verses 12 to 14. He says, I, the preacher, the king over Israel and Jerusalem, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all the things done under heaven. this grievous test God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have exercised or tested. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. And this is his conclusion. You look at life from under the sun, from a secular, godless point of view. And what is it? He says, it's vanity. It's empty. It's like trying to grab hold of the wind. If I go back to chapter 1, verse 2, he writes, vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, it's all vanity. It's empty. It's pointless. Through this magnificent book, we realize that life doesn't offer much of purpose or satisfaction without God. We'll see that the goodness of God in this life, knowing that a Christian life is not only about what is to come, but what now is. I look here and I see the purpose of a godless life is that there really is none. I did a little research when I was looking here, and I said, what does a person who doesn't believe in God, what do they believe about life? So I looked up a few atheist websites, and this is what I've gotten. According to atheists, from a purely biological perspective, the whole purpose of life appears to be survival and reproduction. It's kind of disappointing, isn't it? Clarence Darrow. Anybody know that name, Clarence Darrow? He was a lawyer. He was a lawyer in the Scopes Monkey Trial in 1925. He said this, trying to determine that really there is no God. The purpose of living, the purpose of life is living. Men and women should get the most they can out of their lives. That's what life is all about. Solomon, he looks at life, he says, wait a minute. There's nothing here. Oh, look here. Look in verse 4. One generation passes away and another generation comes. And guess what? Not here in the text. That generation passes away and another one comes. In other words, guess what's going to happen? You're going to die. And somebody else is going to come along. That's the nature of man. But look at the rest of the world. The sun, the earth, it abides forever. He's not trying to be theologically correct there. He's just observing from a human standpoint, you know, the earth really hasn't changed that much. The sun, it comes up and it goes down. Some people look at that and say, see, they believe the sun went around the earth. If you look at any newscast anywhere on at least America, I don't know if it be the planet. Do you know what happens at 6:48 in the morning? Sunrise, right? And at 8:26 at night, sunset, right? So who's being unscientific? Is it us or him? Because we just said the same thing he did. It appears to go up, doesn't it? And it appears to go down. So if somebody comes along you and says, well, your Bible is all wrong because it says that the sun goes around the earth, you say, well, just watch the newscast tonight and you'll find out that we believe the same thing. It's not a book of science. He's looking at life from his perspective, from a strictly man perspective. And he says the sun goes up and it comes down. It goes back around, it says it hastens back to the place it came back up. The wind, it goes towards the south, and it turns around and comes north. The wind whirls about continually. It comes again and on its circuit. And all the rivers, they run into the sea, yet the sea is never full, and which the place from which the rivers came, they'll go again. All these things, they're full of labor. Man cannot express it. In fact, the eye is never satisfied with seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. And all the things that are going on, you see it continually. What sometimes called a circle of life. Not really a circle of life, circle of the universe. You know, you have these patterns. Things come, things go, and they come back around. And, you know, it's kind of like bell bottoms. Do you remember that? bell bottoms came back. They didn't call them bell bottoms because they didn't want, you know, plagiarize or something like that. But it was, what, 10 years ago that they had a little different cut and it was bell bottoms. That's why I keep all my stuff, my clothes from 20, 30 years ago. One day it'll come right back in. Now, I don't have a leisure suit. I've never owned one of those. But you never know, it could come right back in. It is true that, you know, we're never satisfied in life. Are we ever satisfied in life? Do you watch your favorite TV show? Guess what? There's going to be another episode, so you're probably going to watch again. You look and it says here that everything's going on. Verse 9, that which has been, that is what's going to be. That which is done, that is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. There's a new movie out. Ben-Hur. Heard about it? It was made a long time ago. And they decided to make it again. Sometimes I see commercials for movies, and other than the fact that well, I don't think we're going to watch that one, I think to myself, you know, they made something kind of like that not long ago. That Sharknado, if you heard about that show, that movie, and now there's like a Sharknado 18 or something, I don't know. I heard it was a really, really poorly made, dumb movie, which is why everybody liked it. It entertained everybody. And now, I don't know, someone said there's like two or three of them or something like that. I went on Netflix. I said, was it Netflix or YouTube or something? I just wanted to see just a little bit. It was bad. I mean, just pathetic. It looked like teenagers made this movie. But I looked in a bunch of titles. And there was one about squids and one about something else. And I just couldn't believe it. You know what they all are? Godzilla again. I mean, it seems like our creativity is gone. But you know, we look at life and things that have happened in life, especially the nature of man, hasn't changed, has it? You look at our world and you say to ourselves, look at our world. Look at how bad it has become. Look at the rampant, not just a acceptance of, but approval and endorsement of homosexuality. Hey, do you know what it was 4,000 years ago? God destroyed five cities for homosexuality. It's not new. Become a little more aware of the rampant human trafficking. It's not really human trafficking. That's a polite way of putting it. It's sex trafficking that takes place in Omaha. And around this country, it is sickening. Her testimony of girls as young as 9, 12 and 9. I have a 9-year-old that are stolen and put into these industries. It's sick. But it's nothing new. It's something that happened back in the Roman days. It's something that happened even before that. Well, what does it do? What does it bring? What's the whole point of it? We look in all of life and we see the nature of man. It's like it always was. We see that the world continues to go on, but you know, one day we're going to die. So I go through the book of Ecclesiastes. Paul makes this point. He says, what is so important about this life? What's the purpose of it? And why does it really matter? Because you're just going to die anyway. He's got a good point. All the hard work, the labor that you've done, and I don't know that anybody here fits this, but the millions that you're going to leave to your kids, what good did it do you? Because you're dead. And you don't even know that you're alive and made the money because you just ceased to exist. If I take an atheistic point of view, what is life about? If there is no God, there's no afterlife. There's no judgment day. And I'm to live my life to the fullest. Why would I not seek to do everything and anything to bring pleasure to myself? Legal or illegal? What would keep me from doing that? Because if that's the point of life, then that's what should happen. But Paul, even after participating, we'll see in the weeks ahead, in some of that, you know what he says? It's all pointless. It doesn't really satisfy. It doesn't really fulfill. It doesn't fit purpose. It makes you happy for a little bit, and then that's it. It's gone. And so he draws that conclusion. Not the conclusion that's the right conclusion. He brings that at the end of the chapter, so if you want to cheat, you have to look there. But if life has no God, then it's all pointless. Chapter 1, verse 2. Empty, vanity, pointless, worthless, completely worthless. Everything, it's worthless. How do we apply something like this to your life? Let me pull this out here. You know, you look at the world and you see that they are living for themselves, for pleasure. They're living for the next thrill. Look at your own life as a believer. What are you living for? If you're to evaluate your life, just think about all the things that you do. Why are you doing it? Why do you work where you work? And why do you do that kind of job? And why are you working? Well, someone's got to pay the bills. Well, that's understandable. But is that all there is? You live, you work, you die? What about the things that you enjoy doing in your life? The entertainment that you have, amusements. What about purpose and goal in your life? What is it? There's nothing wrong with having maybe many goals. You know, one day I'd like to be able to go this place or that place. One day I'd like to be able to experience, you know, the thrill of going to Europe or to Israel, or, you know, going and seeing the Ark Encounter. That'd be fun. I'd love to do that out there in Kentucky. What is it? Yeah, we have different goals that we like, but what's our ultimate goal? Is it to see what we can achieve? Is it to be the best known person doing what we do? Is it to accumulate the most stuff? You see, it's really easy for us as Christians who live in this world to take the world's point of view and adopt it. To say the reason that I live is because, I know the right answer is to honor God. But as I look at my life, and I see the things that I'm doing, does it really reflect the fact that I want to just simply live life to its fullest the same way the world does? Maybe not doing the exact same things. And then what does that say about me? What is my purpose in life? Does it really mean to be something different as a Christian? Does God really make a difference if, as a Christian, I think I should live like the world? Ecclesiastes, Solomon points out that God does make the difference. We're going to see that over the next few weeks, and I want to encourage you as we go through this study that you consider what the Scriptures tell us. That we don't live for ourselves, we live for God. Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 10 say, "Therefore put to death the members of your body which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is adultery. Because these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them, but now you yourselves are to put off all these things. Anger and wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in the knowledge according to the image of him who created him." Our lives ought to reflect Jesus Christ, not the world. So we take and consider that we are going to participate in communion here, just a couple minutes. Let's remember that Jesus Christ died for our sin, So that way we are no longer slaves to sin, but rather we are children of righteousness. That Jesus Christ makes all the difference in the world. The fact that there is a God who we are accountable to. And because of what Jesus Christ did, we could be completely forgiven and made right before God. So that way, not just in the future we have a home in heaven, but even now we have that relationship with Him that makes all the difference. As we begin here to look at communion, let's remember what Christ did. Not only in realization of our right standing before God, but of what the real purpose of life is now that we've seen who Jesus is and what He did for us.